Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, Steele, how are you?
Dave, I am doing brilliant.
Again, I have a friend in the studio. 2 weeks in a row, I'm moving soon. I'm not going to be working with her anymore. It brings tears to my eyes, so we had to have Katie in at least one more time.
I'm back.
Katie, I'm
back,
so
and
glad.
Expecting compensation.
We're just hoping
just
to
saying.
Soak up as much of you as we can before Dave leaves to the barren desert.
Thanks. It is really sad. It's a sad day.
So still, I do have one issue I want to bring up with you real quick.
Please.
Now, you know that you assigned a book for me to read called Warbreaker.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the cover of this book?
Now tell me more about the cover. I'm not sure if I've seen it.
So Steele, there's a somewhat provocatively clad woman with white hair and a rainbow-colored ribbon breathing out of her mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually a sword at her feet. If you were, say, to read this in a public place, a lot of people would form an opinion of you.
Mm-hmm.
Just gotta turn it. Oh, wow. You know, Dave...
Can you get it closer? Can you actually see, like, the lady in the ribbon? There it is.
Dang.
Yeah. She's very of the times, though.
You can't tell me, Dave, that this isn't a book that you would have liked, though.
I'm really enjoying it so far, yeah.
See, that's all that matters. I don't care what the cover looks like. My job was to recommend a book that I thought you would like, and I succeeded at that. Is the cover a little bit porny, creepy? Yes. Is that going to be a problem
porny.
For a man like you with a little sketchy beard walking around in public? Probably. But Dave, you should have thought of that when you picked it up. I mean, that's that old, you knew what I was when you picked me up.
So Katie, you walk into your lunchroom, you're on break, you see a small man reading this book. What are your thoughts?
God, so many thoughts. I mean, first I wasn't sure, like, is she breathing out the rainbow? And what does that mean?
Breathing out a rainbow, that's a euphemism for something.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. So then all of these, you know, questions go through my head and your...
Well, I mean, as a male nurse reading a book about a woman who breathes out a rainbow...
Exactly.
Do you even have questions? You've got answers going through your head.
Exactly. Well, you said it, Steele. You said it.
So I'm loving the book so far, Steele. Honestly, I'm liking it. But I think more than a few people have thought me stranger than they already thought when they see me with this book.
You know, Dave, there's an appropriate aphorism for this. You can't judge a book by its cover.
Oh, boy.
There it is.
Good wisdom. Timeless wisdom.
Speaking of timeless, I want to talk to you guys about summer fashion this week. We got a lot on the docket. We're going to talk about summer fashion. We're going to talk about some off-the-chain friendships. Since we've brought you back, Katie, I think you're definitely in the friend zone, whatever that
Hey-o.
Means.
What does that mean?
We've got some Unchained melodies. We're going to be talking about 1990s hip-hop one-hit wonders, so mm-hmm. pretty much the greatest music of our life.
Literally.
And we've got some really great book wisdom coming at the end here. But I want to start with summer fashion, because this stuff is really timeless. I live in Wisconsin. You guys live in land of perpetual summer. But here in Wisconsin, there's like 3 months that people have to really rock their summer fashions.
And, you got to get it all in quick.
And the college kids do. I wanted to start this conversation, just open it up. In your opinions, what is the greatest summer fashion of all time?
Man, I mean, seersucker is what comes to my brain first, because I don't even understand what the material is, and it's just fantastic in every way.
Why is it called seersucker is my number one question, because that's what puts it over the top.
Yeah,
I mean, if
completely.
It was just, like, called something else, you'd be like, oh, that's interesting looking. I wonder why wealthy white lawyers in the South wear this so much.
Because it's extraordinarily comfortable. I have a pair of seersucker pants.
Do you?
I never picked up the suit coat somehow. I don't know what happened that I failed that way. But I wear them pretty regularly, of course, only in summer. And they're fantastic. It's like wearing pajamas in public.
That's fantastic.
And everybody's thinking, that guy looks really good.
Really good in his seersucker.
That's really cute of both of you to agree on that. And unfortunately, you're mistaken. You were close. That is maybe the second greatest summer fashion of all time. But the undisputed greatest summer fashion of all time are actually white linen suits.
They're like cousins. These are very close.
They are.
That's what I'm saying.
They're
cousins. But yeah, let me just ask Mark Twain. Mark Twain, he's like, I could wear a seersucker if I wanted to be just, you know, another humorist. But I'm interested in being the greatest American humorist of all time. Therefore, et ergo, white linen. And he just dropped it on the nation, and everybody just said, Mark Twain is the greatest American humorist of all time because of the white linen.
He dropped it. He did. And Colonel Sanders really did that.
And there once upon a time was a famous cop. He was down in Miami running the Vice Squad. And they're like, you know, you're memorable, but you're not going to get a TV show. And he says, you know what? I'm going to get a TV show. Put on a white linen suit. Welcome to Don Johnson.
So we're talking about the greatest American humorist, greatest American chicken cooker, and greatest American policeman.
What do they have in common?
White linen suits.
I once went to a Ross Dress for Less, bought a white linen suit off the rack, and emailed Jordan Fox the next day just to boast. It wasn't my size, but it was on the rack, and then I took it home with me. I maybe wore it once or twice, but it was, I couldn't believe that they were selling it to me. I was like, what? You don't realize this is a national treasure. Why would you sell this, Ross? Keep it.
There's so many things about that story that I love. The fact that you call it Ross Dress for Less, the entire name, not just Ross. The fact that you bought a suit that doesn't fit you just because it was white linen.
Kitty, you can take it to a tailor and make it fit. You just can't take a well-fitting suit to a tailor and make it white linen.
You make a very valid point, too.
I was certain that story was going to be, and then I went to an interview the next day, and I became president of the University of Wisconsin. I don't know how it didn't end that way.
Yeah.
But it will.
All right, so basically it's just downhill from here, but other summer fashions that are worthy of note?
I love overalls still. I don't want them just for toddlers. I want them for tweens, teenagers, old men, anybody. You throw overalls on, it says summer, it says fun, it says let's pick some weeds, and afterwards we'll listen to some 90s hip-hop.
And they are making a comeback, those overalls.
Are they really?
Yeah, they're kind of making them sexy now. Like,
yeah,
they're,
it's
like,
true.
Missing
a lot of people,
a lot of...
they don't wear the shirt underneath. It shows a lot of side boob or whatever. It's kind of creepy.
Yeah. They sexified it.
Oh, man.
Hey, Dave, what's great about this, though, at Wisconsin, they have this tradition at the football games. A bunch of people will wear red and white striped overalls everywhere. They're kind of like seersucker overalls to the Badger football games. You would love them.
That sounds amazing.
They're totally amazing. Very agricultural.
Very agricultural.
That's summer fashion. That's terrific.
Year-round summer fashion.
That's winter that they're wearing those things.
Yeah. And there's obviously like summer colors that become very more prevalent in the summer.
In Arizona, do people still respect summer colors, or is it just like those are the colors people wear all year?
Yeah, that's a tough question. I think that generally there is some respect for the colors, but also, you know, like surf attire, which is what people tend to wear here, and that's always kind of colorful.
Never a mistake to wear surf attire, because you never know when a wave's going to roll in downtown
it's
Mesa.
It's so true. It's so true. You never know.
You just got to have your board at the ready.
Well, you spoke of buying a white linen suit, a Ross Dress for Less. I walked into a thrift store, looked at the t-shirt rack, pulled out kind of a pastel orange t-shirt.
Nice.
Extraordinarily thin. It said four words on it. I like to surf. Bought it, walked out. I wanted to just wear it on the way out, but I had to pay for it.
Man.
You know what's really great about that shirt, Dave? The understatement. It's the understatement. It could have used any verb there, but it just said like, because it didn't want to put it in people's face too much.
Right. You don't want to elevate your status too much in the surfing world.
I just like it. I mean, just want you to know
I'm
I right like
with
to
it.
Surf.
Yeah, I'm cool with surfing. It's not my whole life or anything, but
I like to
I
do
know
it.
How to surf. Yeah.
I can maybe get up here and there.
One of many things that I like doing. I will say my favorite summer fashion, this is just a life fashion, really. I love Izod shirts or Lacoste. If it's a polo style shirt and there's an animal, at least one animal sewn on the breast. I used to go to thrift stores and just pull out all the shirts I could find that had animals sewn over the breast. And at one point, I probably had like 12 to 15 different animal polo shirts. It's amazing.
Different
There's
animals.
All these, yeah, generic knockoffs because they want to imitate the crocodile.
Oh my gosh, that's fantastic, yeah.
So clearly the crocodile is good. But if you can find a tiger or like a bear, I remember there was
penguin.
A bear one. Penguin. I have a shirt. It's my best shirt right now. It's a whale, but it's not just there over the breast. There's whales all over the shirt. So it's a polo shirt with probably 100 tiny whales sewn on, including part that the buttons. It's like everywhere.
This is amazing.
It's really amazing.
Who
I
makes
love that
this
shirt.
I need it.
I don't know. It was a thrift store find, but it's a whale shirt. I'll let you know.
Fantastic.
Obviously. So shirts with animals on them, sewn on, embroidered, preferably.
Yes.
Yeah, that's huge. That's huge for summer still. You can wear that the rest of the year, but polo that says summer. It says I'm going to enjoy where I'm at. It says still, there's a couple different things you can wear with a polo shirt, but my number one pick would be any short showing at least 4 inches of skin above the male knee.
Yeah.
The male knee.
Preferably it's a short where it's so short you're not sure if it's just a band at the bottom of the shirt. Like an extra fabric band, or whether you're like, is there, it could just be something sewn on, oh no, that's shorts. You have to like get
it's
up close
short.
To take a look.
Yeah. It's like those coaching shorts that were just so tight with the wide waistband.
That's a good move. Particularly, if you're going to be wearing shorts like that, why not DIY? Why not make it yourself? Homemade jorts, that's always a good look.
Oh man, absolutely.
Homemade tank tops, I love. I mean, we get a lot of homemade tank tops here in Wisconsin, where it's a dude that just a shirt.
Oh, yeah.
He just cut out a big segment so you can see, like, his ribs. You can see,
yeah.
like, his love handles. It's just like, it was a t-shirt, now it's a tank top, it's summer.
It's official.
And you never just cut the sleeves off. That's not enough.
No.
You cut the sleeves off, and then you make a slit down
the
side.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
This is...
I bet Dan Janajan used to teach classes on this at Kettle Moraine High School.
Actually, I think all of his shirts are tank tops.
The worst day of his life was when he learned that the garments meant you had to keep your arms covered.
Oh, no. That is probably a devastating time.
That's why you never see me in tank tops, Katie.
Man.
Yeah.
My faith. That's the only thing holding me back.
Otherwise, you would see all of it.
Yes. The only thing holding me back.
So, Katie, how about you? I mean, we're focusing mainly on male fashion. What would you have to add from the world of women's clothing?
Oh, well, there's always the romper, which makes a real big appearance in the summer.
What is the romper?
The romper in the female summer fashion sense is basically it's a onesie. It's an adult onesie is really what it is, but like shorts.
So this is like 1930s women's swimsuit.
Yes, kind of, except it's fabric. You have not seen this deal? This is like the biggest thing ever here.
Does it attach with buttons at the bottom, or how do you get in and out of it?
No, you would think. No, I think it's actually buttons in the back, like on the back. So you like open up the whole thing and then slide it on and then button up the back. Or zipper maybe. I'm not really sure.
Do you need help to wear it?
I can't wear them because I'm so tall and it just ends up a big wedgie for me.
It's
not fantastic,
toe.
Guys. I get a romper toe. It's front and back, guys. It's not good.
Ew.
Took it a little too far, Katie.
That's how I knew it.
Laurel suggested, she said mom jeans are totally in.
Mom
They're
jeans.
Very in this summer. The high-waisted with the pleats, so it looks like you have like a bulging pouch right between your belly button and your crotch. Those are very in right now for
good
some
look.
Reason.
It's a really good look. The high-waisted for sure. We haven't seen as much of the pleats. That may be a Midwest thing. But
those never went out of fashion in Wisconsin, though. Is that correct?
No, it's true. Especially, they're like, oh, they're stonewashed and they got pleats?
Oh,
Counted
my gosh.
Twice.
I'm in.
Done.
I'm in.
Done. I did go to a thrift store in L.A., and they legitimately had some hammer pants.
Oh, yeah.
And I was so tempted to buy them.
Were they Jordache brand? Because Jordache makes really great pants.
They were Jordache, but they were too short for me. Again, such a problem.
Turn them into jorts. Come on, Katie. Opportunity lost.
Where were you? Where were you when I needed you?
Phone call away. I'm only a phone call away.
It's true. And then, like, the gladiator sandals, that's a big female summer fashion thing. The espadrilles, which is, like, those
Thank
are
you.
Classic,
How do you,
though.
I wanted to bring those up, but I don't know how to say the word, so say it again.
Espadrilles?
Yeah, espadrilles. I was like, espadrilles? Espadrilles? I didn't know
how
to say it.
Is. What is that referring to?
They're basically the wedge, but instead of, like, the wood wedge or whatever, it's almost like a woven...
It's usually a plant fabric for the...
Plant fabric,
hemp. It's like a fisherman's shoe in the south of France or something. Like Toms. Okay. Toms sort of look like them. Toms ruined it.
Sometimes. Toms ruined it.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
But they're cool.
So those are big. I'm not cool, so I don't wear those. But they are definitely for the ladies.
You carry around your Moleskine notebook and write your artistic thoughts in it all the time.
Yes. Well, and I'm just so tall. That's really the issue. I'm just tall and awkward. I can't wear those fun things.
Well, hey, this is something that doesn't matter if you're tall or not. Puff paint, it's back.
What?
Yeah. Puff paint t-shirts.
I have not seen this.
Like the big, like, you know, hip-hop style t-shirts where it's like big, colorful puff paint kind of thing. You
heck
can wear those and be tall. In fact, they're supposed to be like triple XLs, so.
True story. I will be doing it.
I made a Calvin and Hobbes one when I was in elementary school.
No!
It's very handsome.
Did Bill Waterston sue you for copyright infringement? Because he doesn't license Calvin for anything.
Uh-oh.
No, he doesn't. We could get into that another time. He's my hero. That guy's so cool.
He's my hero.
The last thing, I want to know if this is big in Arizona. Because this is, Katie, when you were on the first time many years, months ago, you were talking about athletes and their scooters.
Yes.
Well, here's the deal. At Wisconsin, all the football players, all the male football players ride their scooters everywhere. And this is the look. They wear the athletic shorts, black crew socks, and slip-on sandals.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's the football. That's football right there.
That's the look of, like, if you want to look like a relaxed, athletic, I don't know, I was going to say tween, but what's the in-between being a teenager and being adult, whatever college students are?
I don't even know. A-holes. That's what they're called, a-holes.
That's the look. That's like every dude on Wisconsin campus wants to aspire to that look.
Ugh.
My father-in-law does that a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
Black socks with sandals. He nails it.
Or you're like elderly Japanese tourists.
Yes.
They've been killing that look for decades.
When I was in middle school, I really tried to make the cool socks with Birkenstocks look good. That was interesting.
How'd it
work?
That
didn't go well. No. It went? Clearly, didn't go well for me.
When you combine it with Retin-A, I think it's even better.
With the Accutane, yeah. Guys, things were rough for a while.
Guys, you got a new headgear. Hi.
I had it all.
It glows in the dark.
It glows in the dark. Sexy.
So, Steele, what's your number one go-to this summer? What are you wearing? What are you going to do?
Well, here's the thing, guys. Bad news. I had a check-in with my boss, you know, my annual check-in, and I was informed that there is an informal dress code at work that only needs to be applied selectively, but needs to be applied to me.
Oh, no.
So I just have to look like a professional is what she basically told me in kind terms.
The cutoffs are done, no more?
Well, I can't. I mean, I don't know. So I'm basically dressing like business casual all the time now, like a tool.
Nah, you're an adult. That's what it is.
You look like a Poindexter today, I was going to say, but...
A Poindexter.
I really do. At least I look... Hey, check it out, though. Oh, yeah.
Nice!
I rolled
up
the sleeves.
You got the roll.
I'm like,
you did it.
So that it looks like I'm wearing like a very blousy shirt now, because I don't know how to do it in a way that doesn't make my arms look enormous.
You're Peter Panning it.
Yeah, I'm really... I'm like Renaissance actor.
That's awesome.
You and Don Johnson. A lot of sleeve rolling for Don Johnson, too. So.
True story.
Good move. Yeah.
Anybody have any final fashion advice or fashion looks for this summer before we move on to our next episode?
I'm going to say less is more in the summer. Less fashion, more...
Oh, okay.
it seemed like you're going in a different direction with that, Katie.
It was ambiguous, and that's how I wanted it to be.
Oh. So take that wherever you want to. That's great fashion advice. Less is more. Go anywhere. I don't have any fashion advice. What I believe happens to everyone is the look that you had when you were 25, that's just what you keep for the remainder of your life. So
more goodwill is what you're saying.
Yeah. So just go pick up your t-shirts, from Goodwill. That's what I've done since then, and I'm never going to change.
Don't do it.
You got a T-shirt on right now that I noted, but I didn't take careful notice of. What does it just say?
This is my best friend Matt Howard sent this to me in the mail. Can you believe that?
I can.
It says, "I'm about to do something awesome."
The only sad part is that it's iron-on letters rather than puff paint. It'd be more believable if it had puff paint or a little Frank logo on it.
Yeah, you could puff paint trace it with the puff paint.
It just made me feel special that he thought of me enough to send me this shirt that he bought at a thrift store somewhere in Utah.
That's nice.
It's beautiful.
Hey, well, this is a perfect segue because the next topic on our docket today is a new segment that Dave's going to introduce to us called Off the Chain Friendship.
Oh, man. Still, friendship is a beautiful thing. Whenever you mail a thrift store T-shirt across state lines, it means that you have a true friendship. So we're going to do a discussion about friendship and the strength that can be gained from off-the-chain friendships. We'll examine some famous friendships and talk about personal experiences with friendship.
Oh, Dave, that could have been like the lead-in to like a 1970s children's TV show.
Aww.
Well, we're here to help people. I want people to know how to establish and maintain a long-lasting friendship and what's so good about friendship.
And before we get too deep in, I think you misspoke, Dave. You said, I want to help people. But what you really mean is, I want to help men.
There is a lot of sexism that's happening right now.
So, Steele, we were doing a basic list of off-the-chain friendships last night. We were going through the greatest friendships of all time, and I don't think this is an error that none of them are women. It's only men. Men are the only ones that have these deep friendships. Women, it's just not fair. They don't have profound friendships the way that men do. So, yeah, this is, if you're a woman, you can turn this segment off. That's okay.
Or, I mean, keep listening. Maybe it'll give you something to aspire to.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, you can understand on maybe a different level. Mm-hmm. Not the same level, mm-hmm. but a different level. Mm-hmm. Which is
I will fun. Say... I object pretty profoundly, Dave. But look, go ahead. Proceed. This is your segment. Let's hear about the first example of homosocial male friendship.
Homosocial male friendship.
So, Steele, the greatest literary friendship of all time takes place between a sea captain, Captain Jack Aubrey, and the surgeon on his ship. That's Dr. Stephen Maturin. You may know them from the film Master and Commander. But I know them from all 20 books of the Master and Commander series that I've read multiple times.
You are so cool.
Can I tell you something, Dave? I love that you think this is the greatest literary friendship. I read the segments you included for Book Wisdom to my wife, Laurel, last night. And I've never seen her more confused. She said, "Why would you read those books?" And I was like, "No,
why would you read those books?"
She's like, "There's more than one of them?" And I was like, "Yeah, I think there's like 12 or 13." But she'll be overjoyed when I tell her there's actually 20 that you've read.
20.
Well, tragically, Steele, he was writing the 21st when he died.
That is
and
tragic.
He wrote all the books longhand and cursive. So the version of 21 that I've read half of, you have to somehow decipher his handwriting to read it.
Really?
Yeah.
Because they didn't realize they could just type it up and publish it like they had typed the first 21?
Or they wanted to leave it up to people's interpretation because he wasn't there? Is that...
I don't know what the choice was, but the choice was perfect. Because these men, their friendship spans the Napoleonic Wars. These guys are fighting the French, which always brings people together.
Yeah.
But they're kind of like a perfect strangers relationship. Another fantastic friendship from the television show Perfect Strangers. We've got Captain Jack Aubrey, the naval captain, extremely intelligent when it comes to naval matters, but the rest of life he's kind of a little bit of a dunce, a little bit of a klutz, but just the greatest naval commander you could have. Mm-hmm. Then you have Dr. Stephen Maturin, doesn't understand naval stuff whatsoever, but a genius when it comes to being a physician and natural things, like he studies animals and plants, and just fantastic. So their friendship crosses these wonderful boundaries. But
sounds
it's
like the show,
together.
Dave. Sounds a bit like the show.
Yes.
It's like you and I still. We're perfect strangers.
I have a feeling that I'm the Captain Jack Aubrey of this relationship. So. He doesn't understand life, but he sure knows a lot about one really unimportant thing.
But genuinely, I love the friendship. It's established a lot in humor and just a deep affection towards each other, which in the 18th or 19th century, it's not so weird to talk about affection between men. Mm-hmm. And it's just a beautiful thing. I wish that we could more freely show our manly affection still.
I don't see why you can't. Bromance is very cool now.
I agree. I feel like we do, Dave. I think that's one of the things I treasure about our friendships from our close group of friends at college. I've always felt fairly free by showing my affection for you guys.
That's awesome. Yeah.
What's the most affectionate friendship you've had, Katie?
That's a really good question. So I've had the same best friend since 8th grade, and we have
a little tired
basically
of her by
just,
now, I bet, huh?
Right? Yeah, just done. Just dropped her, because, I mean, what do? You
getting
reach
a little
30,
old, like, friend. You're getting a little old.
You're really taking a downturn. You have too many kids. I can't handle you.
Heard that story before.
Right? So I would say that ours is probably by far the most affectionate, just because we are so involved in each other's lives and families. And when you're in eighth grade and you grow up together, even though I went away for college and, you know, we spanned different times of our lives from different locations and still remain to be insanely close. But then I also think that friendships made from a team perspective, you know, when you're on a team and you become so close when you're like fighting for a goal, it's like anything, like military friendships, team friendships, any of those where you go through kind of a hardship and you work together in order to achieve something. I think that builds a bond that's so strong and so unbreakable.
Are you talking about the friendship we formed in turning large patients
yes.
and wiping their bottoms?
Yes.
Is that
or trying
what
to bag,
you're getting into?
Or trying to bag a gigantic dead person that went horribly, horribly wrong.
I think that actually leads to the second example of friendship that we listed really, really well. And it's a friendship that doesn't share a common language, but they were enlisted in the same battle against the evil empire.
Absolutely.
And it's the friendship of Han Solo and his loyal Wookiee companion, Chewbacca. Dave, what inspired you to list this as one of the legendary off-the-chain friendships?
I love all these friendships, and I want to kind of get to the heart of why these friendships matter, what they're doing for each other. But these two beings, they cross races, species even, to form an eternal bond of friendship. I like the fact that Han Solo and Chewbacca are always going to be there for each other. No matter what occurs, no matter if you're frozen in carbonite, if you're facing a large Jabba the Hutt creature, whatever's going to happen, they're together. I think that's what defines their friendship, is they're going to support each other through anything.
I was just going to say, summer fashion's still in my mind, and talk about a great look, the crossed ammo belt. No
Ooh,
shirt,
yeah.
Just wearing a crossed ammo belt out around. Chewbacca had it figured out. Tons of hair, just get real hairy, and then wear two ammo belts that cross over your chest to highlight
That's
your kind
fantastic.
Of pep definition.
I'm expecting your Facebook photo to turn into that exact image.
There's a lot of ladies out there expecting that, Katie.
Amen. I hear you. But I'm not all too familiar with Star Wars, but what brought those two together?
The answer to this is really great. It's outside of the film canon, but I looked this up, actually. So, Chewbacca owes a life debt to Han Solo. Han Solo saved his life in, like, some slave pits or something like that. Is that about right, Dave?
Yeah, life debt is the key term.
Interesting.
So, some people think of it as loyalty. People like Dave
right.
are like, oh, yeah, it's loyalty, you know? But my perspective is a bit more cynical. I think Chewbacca secretly thinks that Han Solo is just a moron. But because he owes him a life debt, he's obligated to be there for him. But if it was up to him, he'd be like among his own species doing things that he enjoyed.
Right.
But, you know, you
like,
saved my life.
Why am I here?
I'm sort of enslaved to you. But, you know, each his own.
That's kind of sacrilege. But the first two friendships we've talked about, I think loyalty defines Han Solo and Chewbacca. And Captain Jack Aubrey and Dr. Stephen McTurin, I think really humor to be able to enjoy each other's company, even though they're so different. But the next friendship that is completely off the chain would be Jerry Seinfeld and George Costanza. What do you think defines that friendship?
Neuroticism?
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Outsized reactions to minor irritations?
You really appreciate it when you have a friend that you're just on the same page with.
Yeah.
Like, regardless, you know where he's coming from and he knows where you're coming from. Of course, it's a male-male friendship because that's the only
real friendship
take place. No, but actually, when I think about this, I think about my friendship with my wife, that on any given subject, we're going to be on the same page. And if I say something I think is funny, usually she's going to think it's funny,
yeah,
too.
I love friendships so that people can legitimately sort of, like, fight each other, where it's like, come on, you're being crazy, you know, or whatever. They're, like, legitimately have their emotions towards the other person and still genuinely love each other. I love friendships like that.
Yeah, and I think that's a certain mark. There's a depth and a stability. You're certain of where you stand with the person, that you're not fearful of disagreeing.
Right.
That's important.
So true.
And would you consider that an interspecies friendship or no?
Hey, steel baldness, we don't need to bring down bald people. They're doing the best they can.
Oh, bald shaming. Yeah. We don't do that.
No, not on this show. Not on this show.
Okay. Well, let's talk about interplanetary friendships.
Oh, yeah.
Mostly it's interplanetary subjugation, interplanetary slavery, interplanetary probing, but occasionally you get some interplanetary friendships.
Thank goodness for those.
It makes up for all the probing.
Yeah.
Obviously, Alf and anyone who ever met Alf comes to mind, because how could you not love that?
Unless you're
a cat, because he would eat you.
Yeah, Alf's one of those kind of characters that everyone's Alf's best friend. Anyone that meets Alf, yeah, he's my best friend. It's wonderful.
He's like the John Goodman of Aliens.
The John Goodman.
The John Goodman from Roseanne, whatever his name was.
Oh, yeah, he was lovable.
Dan.
Ah, oh, that's exactly right.
Dan
Connor, is that right?
Yeah. What a great show.
So, Dave, your best interplanetary friendship, if you had to suggest, like, the model or the archetype for great interplanetary friendships, I think you'd probably say the younger sister from E.T. and E.T.
Steele, you're just trolling me at this point. But you know, the younger sister from E.T., Drew Barrymore, all she wants from E.T. is her own entertainment. She's not going to sacrifice anything for E.T. She's going to dress him up, do whatever, try and take his Reese's Pieces. She's not there to support E.T. You're just saying this to just infuriate me, and it worked. But the friendship that we need to discuss from E.T. is Elliot and E.T. Beautiful. What this friendship's about is a willingness to sacrifice for a friend.
What does he sacrifice, Dave, for those of people who haven't seen this film recently?
Elliot's there. He's going to do anything he can to help E.T. get home, whether it's ride his bike through the sky across the moon, whether it's hide E.T. from his mom, whether it's share the Reese's Pieces with E.T. He's going to do whatever he needs to do to get E.T. to his home.
So this is the idea of, like, a friend is someone who makes their friend's dreams possible. It's a friendship not based on competition, but on cooperation, or a friend who takes sincere pleasure in your successes without measuring them to their own, to your own.
Yeah.
This is my, I think, idea of what I think is most beautiful about friendship and the kind of friend that I would like most to be.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a friendship that you would classify in the E.T. Elliot friendship category?
Someone who helps me phone home? That's probably my wife.
I guess.
Well, that's
beautiful.
That's beautiful too, still.
Yeah.
The last friendship that I wanted to be sure to discuss, of course, it's another male interspecies friendship. Those are very important, I think, in understanding friendship. Is Curious George and the Man with the Yellow Hat. Katie, what do you think about this friendship? What do you think defines it?
Okay, so this one is different to me, and I don't know if I can qualify it as a friendship, because basically the man with the yellow hat stole Curious George. He stole him and sort of forced him onto that situation. And Curious George tried to escape the ship, and the man covered him with his hat and, like, basically was
enslaved
like, no,
him.
Sir.
yeah.
enslaved him. So is it's this a friendship?
This is, again, Dave's thing for the Han Solo, Chewbacca, Curious George, and the Man of the Yellow Hat. I think what it reflects is, like, Dave is so desperate for friendship, he's like, yeah, that counts as a friend. Someone that you, like, totally forced to be your right? friend and, like, lock yeah. in a room and say, like, yeah, I'm taking care of I'm your best friend. No one else will love you. Stay with me. Stay with me.
Right?
That's friendship, right?
Like, I'm the only one that will support your life. You must be my friend.
Come leave everything that you've known and loved, and we'll be friends, okay? It'll be great.
Exactly. Like, I'm taking you away from your home. We're getting on a ship. You're going to be happy. You are
my
friend.
You're
going to
love it. Deep friendship.
You're going to love it. Deep. Very deep.
So, guys, not all friendships are perfectly healthy. Not every friendship's going to be supportive in building you up. Sometimes there's going to be friends that take from you, ignore you when you need them. Like, have you ever read a Curious George book?
Yes, many.
I've read like 20 of them. Every single one, it's the exact same. The young man with the yellow hat takes George somewhere. Then he just stops paying attention to George. He ignores him, and George gets in trouble. And the man with the yellow hat's like, what were you doing, George? I got into trouble because you ignored me again, right. like every other time.
This is, I think it's called the cycle of demand withdrawal
yeah.
kind of relationship.
Very unhealthy.
Yeah, we want to seek towards more of a, I guess, an Elliot E.T. friendship. You want to avoid the man with the yellow hat in your life.
I would say that is a true statement.
Keep your distance from slave catchers, basically. That's the worst.
So, Katie,
the worst.
I'm going to give you an opportunity. We've talked just about a male-male friendship almost
yes.
exclusively.
Yes.
Do you have any thoughts about why female friendship isn't as good?
Oh, come on! You're fired, Dave.
You're so fired. Well, it's an interesting... I mean, actually, it is a really interesting topic because I think mostly the fact that female friendships aren't as written about or as documented is interesting. But, I mean, if you think about, like, if you've ever read The Red Tent and things like that, where there were these, like, female companions, like, you know, like, there were sisterhoods, I guess you could say, where they... all at the same time, they would be stuck in this tent while they were menstruating or whatever was happening or giving birth. And they literally had to come together as females and assist through that. And I think there's, I mean, like, obviously, it wasn't just friendships. It was like they were each other's livelihood during those times. Mm. And so, I mean, I think there was such strength with women, especially in ancient times. I don't know, female strength and working together, there's such a dichotomy. There's so much of it in like girl power and all of these things. But then I think there's also such tearing down that females do to each other. So there is a really interesting dichotomy of female friendships where there's words like frenemies that has come out of female friendships where you're pretend to be friends, but you actually hate each other for like social gain, I guess, is sort of the idea of that.
I would agree, Kaden. I feel like a lot of it is, at least what I see, is a lot of women become conditioned socially to compete for men's attention.
Exactly.
And there's that scarcity feeling and the sense of like, if I get this, if this other person gets this thing, I can't have any of it because it's not an
right.
abundant thing. It's a scarce thing because I'm a woman.
Right. Exactly. And I guess it is kind of the Elliot E.T. thing where you're like lifting each other up and like you're wanting the other person to succeed no matter what the cost to you could be, even though there probably isn't a cost.
Yeah, right. That's the danger, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So it is interesting, but I did actually look up a few of the like more famous female friends and there was some surprises like Marilyn Monroe and Ella Fitzgerald.
Oh,
I guess they were extremely close. Yeah.
Cool.
And they had this like very powerful friendship where Ella, you know, she wanted to sing for prominent places and the owners wouldn't allow her because they thought that with segregation and everything, she wouldn't be successful. So Marilyn Monroe demanded that they hire her and that she would sit front and center every night in order to bring people in. And it did, and it worked. And they like formed this insane friendship based on that. So that's, I mean, it's really beautiful to hear those kinds of stories. And I do think there are a lot of, I mean, there's Oprah Winfrey and Gayle King, guys.
And there's Tina Fey and Amy Poehler.
Yes, that was another big one.
Cagney and Lacey,
Laverne and Shirley. Like, there are some very, very good examples of female friendships.
The Golden Girls.
Oh, my gosh. The best. God, love them.
Of course you do. You played softball.
There it is. Bea Arthur. She's my girl.
No, actually, I want to. The point that you made at the beginning was actually a really interesting one to me, because when I first came to graduate school, I thought I was going to study Holocaust literature. And so I was reading a lot of these Holocaust testimonies. Most of the narratives that people read are these male survivor narratives. And clearly, the death camps were probably the worst thing that rational human beings have invented. They're awful. And they were designed for suffering. And the experience in those is just leveling. However, there's also a literature of female survivors of the female camps, because they were segregated by gender. And the experience was similar in its outcomes, like people were murdered and it was awful. But the way that they formed social organizations and the societies there were qualitatively different. And the women's organization was, in my opinion, much, much better and much more social. There's a fantastic book called Auschwitz and After by a woman named Charlotte Delbo. And it describes what the camaraderie and the life among these women were in these camps. And it's the same camp that has these male survivors describing this brutal, like, stealing bread from each other and taking stuff from the, you know, like, it becomes vicious and brutal. But among the women, it was much more of that cooperative sharing, let's survive together. And the survival rates and the experience, I think, was different qualitatively for women there.
That's so fascinating.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Such a good way to look at the differences between men and women's relationships together, between themselves, because of the segregation.
Yeah. So,
obviously, I don't feel the way I've been speaking about female relationships.
Of course.
But friendship is. I wanted to bring it up and talk about it just because it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I like to examine relationships and examine the strength that you get from others. That's why I wanted to speak about it at all. It's something that's given me a lot of strength. Still, we've been friends since, I don't know, we were 22 or something like that, 23. And here it's 13 years later, and we still have a very great core group of friends from that college experience. And I take a lot of strength from those guys, and I take a lot of strength from the experiences that we had together. And just having a positive friendship is awesome.
Absolutely.
You can look to someone that can support you like Elliot rather than take from you like the man from the yellow hat.
So true.
Thanks, Dave. That's one of my favorite segments. We need to bring this back. We should have a regular off-the-chain friendship. Another idea that Laurel had as a regular segment was to call it This Week in Death, where I just report about something death-related every week.
Oh,
and I thought
yeah,
it was a great one, but maybe
That's
for
beautiful.
A different podcast. thanks. Thanks, Dave. That was really nice. And thanks, Katie, for
awesome.
Reminding us that women also can form friendships as well.
I do what I can.
Hey, well, this is the part of the episode that I was most excited about in the planning, and it was Unchained Melodies, and it's because we have a theme that really lives up to billing. We're going to talk today about the best one-hit wonders of the 1990s.
Oh, yeah.
From the hip-hop rap genre. There are so many places that you can go with this.
Steel, I want to kick it off with
please.
One I'm very excited about. It's probably my favorite hip-hop song of all time. Nate Dogg and Warren G's classic, Regulate.
Amazing. My first single, actually. My first like cassette single that I ever bought was Regulate. Mount Up.
Regulators! Mount Up! It was a clear black night, a clear white moon. Warren G was on the streets trying to consume some skirts for the E so I could get some phones. Rolling in my ride, chilling all alone.
Just hit the east side of the LBC on a mission trying to find Mr. Warren G. Seen a car full of girls, ain't no need to tweak. All of you search, know what's up with 213.
So I hooked a left on 21 and Lewis. Some brothers shooting dice, so I said, let's do this. I jumped out the rock and said, what's up? Some brothers pulled some gas, so I said, I'm stuck.
Since these girls peeping me, I'm gonna glide and swerve. These hookers looking so hard, they straight hit the curve. Want to bigger, better things than some horny tricks. I see my homie and some suckers all in his mix.
I'm getting jacked, I'm breaking myself.
I can't believe they taken Warren's wealth. They took my rings, they took my Rolex. I looked at the brother, said, damn, what's next?
They got my homie hemmed up and they all around. Can't none of them see him if they going straight down for pound. They wanna come up real quick before they start to clown. I best pull out my strap and lay them busters down.
They got guns to my head, I think I'm going down. I can't believe it's happening in my own town.
If I had wings, I would fly. Let me contemplate. I glance in the cut and I see my homie Nate.
16 in the clip and one in the hole. Nate Dogg is about to make somebody's turn cold. Now they dropping and yelling, it's a tad bit late. Nate Dogg and Warren G had to regulate.
Warren G
is
like a wiener.
Well, true.
Like, Warren G does not look tough when you're listening to the lyrics of this song. Nate Dogg is carrying the toughness.
But hey, you know what? Talk about classic friendships that will stand the test of time. We should have brought them up.
Warren G is the E.T., Nate Dogg's the Elliot. Get him through the dice holdup. Not going to be a problem.
Got to get him to the East Side Motel, or however that part goes. Oh, that's
awesome.
Great, Dave. Katie, what's your first selection for us from this list of wonderful?
Well, I would say that the first one that comes to my brain is Whoop, There It Is, mostly because I know every single word and because it always ended up on like our warm-up tape for warming up for softball. So I'm going to go with Whoop, There It Is.
I didn't know it was an entire song other than just the Whoop, There It Is.
Oh, no, it's a whole song. Wow. It's a whole song.
Party people! Something like this. Tag team, back again. Check it to record, let's begin. Party on, party people, let me hear some noise. DC's in the house, jump, jump, rejoices. There's a party over here, a party over there. Wave your hands in the air, shake the dairy, yeah. These three words mean you're getting busy. Whoop, there it is, hit me.
Shaka-laka, shaka-laka, shaka-whoop.
So here's my question. These three words, is whoop not a word to these guys?
You know what? I have a lot of questions.
And is that song about the moment of ejaculation? Is that what...
Oh my gosh.
Still, I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
I think you might be right.
The whoop is not a word. Man. It's an action, I believe. If we're going to parse the lyrics.
I think you just blew my head off.
Dave, you feeling comfortable over there with the way this conversation has turned?
The moment.
No, I think tag team would be very comfortable with what we're discussing as well.
Tag team, back again.
Yeah, they're...
But when were they around the first time? How are they back again? I have so many questions now. Oh my gosh.
Man. I'm glad they're still here.
Me too.
Hey, well, you know what? I want to play a song that I think follows that song beautifully because they say, tag team, back again, party on, party people, let me hear some noise. Shake your derriere, right?
Oh, yes.
So, the song that I want to play, I you can probably guess what's coming next, but it's Rex and Effects, and it's maybe the greatest song from the 1990s.
All I want to do is zoom, 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 and a boom, boom. All I want to do is zoom, 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 and a boom, boom. All I want to do is zoom, 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 and a boom, boom. All I want to do is zoom, 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 and a boom, boom. All I want to do is zoom, 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 and a boom, boom. Check, baby, one, two, three, four. Check, baby, check, baby.
A wiggle and a tickle can make your night complete.
So let me see you shake it up like dice. The way you shake it up is turning mighty men to mice. But A plus got a surprise that's a backbreaker. Now let me see you shake it up like a rough shaker. All I wanna do is zoom, 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 and a boom, boom. All I wanna do is zoom, 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 and a boom, boom. All I wanna do is zoom, 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 and a boom, boom.
I think the best part of listening to these is
that these lines actually worked on human women.
Well, that they actually worked, but also how sexual they were, and we had no idea when at the age that we listened to them. I had no idea that these are the things that they were saying.
The song that I almost played was Digital Underground's The Humpty Dance. Do you guys remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I think that was 1990. It was right on the threshold.
Didn't quite make the cut.
I don't understand. Why are there so many of these from the 90s? Is it every decade like this, or was the 90s just a unique, special time?
I think it was a special time.
Special time for us, certainly, because we remember all the deep cuts that were like big hits for like a couple months. Right. Would be totally forgotten to anybody else. Like, that was the song, you know, but I don't know.
So still, my second pick.
Yes.
I'm not as comfortable about it, because obviously Regulate is my favorite hip-hop song of all time. It's what I would play if I was have to go out and rob someone. I would play Regulate.
I love knowing that about you, Dave. That's like such a good fact to know.
Well, my second pick, there's so many that I really enjoyed. I love when Marky Mark gets going with his funky bunch. I love what he does. I love anything Vanilla Ice puts out. Sir Mix-a-Lot was a master of poetry. But the guy I'm going to go with is Coolio. Mm. He gets right to the heart of people. And this is Gangsta's Paradise. I don't know if Coolio had more than one hit. I don't know. But I know that this was just terrific.
As I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I take a look at my life and realize there's nothing left. Cause I've been blasting and laughing so long that even my mama thinks that my mind is gone. But I ain't never crossed a man that didn't deserve it. Me be treated like a punk, you know that's unheard of. You better watch how you're talking and where you're walking, or you and your homies might be lying in chalk. I really hate the trip, but I gotta low. As they croak, I see myself in the pistol smoke. Fool, I'm the kind of G the little homies wanna be like. On my knees in the night, saying prayers in the streetlight.
Been spending most of the night.
The most remarkable thing about that is that Michelle Pfeiffer was cast in that movie.
Seriously. Amazing.
What? Talk about, like, white savior complex. Man, oh man, that movie's just so nuts.
She takes Coolio.
That was like the birth of Teach for America right there.
Seriously, right?
What's so good is so far, all these people, they couldn't produce the song alone. They needed a friend to really get it to where it needs to be.
It's true.
LV, that was... it's a good point.
It's a really good point. I mean, you can't talk about 90s one-hit wonders without Sir Mix-a-Lot, Baby Got Back. Mm-hmm. You just can't.
Yeah.
It's like illegal, I would say.
Seattle's finest, representing the Pacific Northwest. There's very few rappers from the Pacific Northwest, but Sir Mix-a-Lot is one of them.
Nice.
It's because no one could... live up to the expectations after this song.
But just Macklemore. Macklemore's the only guy since. And you're like, come on. So here's Sir Mix-a-Lot from the album Mac Daddy.
Out there, I mean, gross. Look. She's just so black.
I like big butts and I cannot lie. You other brothers can't deny. That when a girl walks in with an itty bitty waist and a round thing in your face, you get sprung. Wanna pull up tough, cause you notice that butt was stuck. In the jeans she's wearing, I'm hooked and I can't stop staring. Oh baby, I wanna get whipped up and take your picture. My homeboy's trying to warn me, but that butt you got makes
me so horny.
Ooh, rump a smooth skin. You say you wanna get in my bins? Well, use me, cause you ain't that average groupie. I seen her dancing to hell with romance, and she's sweat wet, got it going like a turbo vet. I'm tired of magazines, send flat butts all the thing. Take the average black man and ask him that. She got a pack much back. So, fellas,
yeah.
Fellas,
yeah.
Your girlfriend got your butt.
Hell
tell
yeah.
Her, shake it,
shake it,
shake it,
shake it,
shake
it.
Shake that healthy butt. Baby got ballet.
Katie, you've said earlier you felt surprised by how sexual these songs were and you had no idea at the time. You can't say you didn't know that song was sexual when you heard that one.
I'll give you that. That one was pretty clear.
What? That's about sex and butts?
Listen, I was a very naive girl. I didn't know how anything was working.
Congrats. That music video, I believe he was literally doing his rapping while standing on butts.
A gigantic butt.
Yeah.
Yes.
Terrific.
Yes. It is terrific. Cinematography, I would say, is one of the best.
Man, there's so many directions. You know, Katie, I was sure that you were going to pick Return of the Mac for one of your songs.
That was number two.
Was it?
Yeah, that was. It's a good one. I actually played with a girl, and her last name was something close to Mac, and that was her song.
That's really sweet. So if I had to pick my last choice for this one, it's a hard one. It's hard to kind of realize that once I pick this song, we're done with the 90s
one-hit
wonders for the week. And there's so many, you know, if you wanted to go like really corny Pillow Talk, you could go with LSG's hit My Body, All Over Your Body. You know, that's a R&B supergroup with a really kind of, But the song that I'm going to pick is my favorite hip-hop song from the 90s. And I don't know if this band, like Coolio, they may not qualify as one-hit wonders, but this is really the only song that people remember today, I would say. And it's Bone Thugs and Harmony. This is also a song that I wouldn't mind having played at my funeral.
Tell me what you gonna do, but it ain't no better from when judgment comes for you.
When judgment comes for you,
tell me what you gonna do,
but it ain't nowhere to hide.
When judgment comes for you,
cause it's gonna come for you.
Listen to that song before in my life. I can't believe it. But it struck me right to the heart.
Dave, it's one of those songs you like. It's hard to not face the fact that you're going to die when you listen to that song. That's like a memento mori right there.
It makes you face your mortality head on.
Yeah.
That's why I intentionally never listened to it. There's too much fear involved in that song with me.
Dave, you got to watch the video. Uncle Charlie's in it. My heart in my hands, man.
My heart in my hands. That's awesome.
I think we should just do that segment permanently. Instead of going Unchained Melodies, it should just be Best One Hit Wonders from the 90s.
Seriously, that's genius.
We could do this indefinitely.
Really good. There's so many.
Let's just scrap the rest of the podcast, actually. All right.
Who's got more songs? So let's play another one. Who else has got one?
Let's go. You're up, Dave.
I can't believe we didn't get the ninja rap in there from Vanilla.
Which one?
The ninja rap from Vanilla Ice.
Oh, you mean this song?
I don't know if I know this one.
Oh, yeah.
Go ninja,
some really high-quality scratching on this record.
Seriously. There wasn't any MCM on there either, was there? I guess it wasn't really a one-hit wonder, though. Multiple.
Early 90s.
Yeah.
So did Vanilla.
Definitely not a one-hit wonder. I mean, have you ever heard Having a Roni? I mean, that song is off the chain.
Off the chain.
But Having a Roni? I can only think of one thing that could possibly mean. And I'm not going to say it on the podcast.
Yeah. So, Dave, that was a sweet pick, but it's not actually... That's not even the best Ninja Turtle related rap song from the 90s.
Oh, no?
You're leaving out Partners in Crime, spell that with a K and a Y. Their song, Turtle Power. I'm jumping ahead here.
Detectives are furious because they can't find the source of this legally evil force. This is serious, so give me a quarter. I was a witness, get me a reporter. Call April O'Neill in on this case, eh? You better hurry
up. April O'Neill.
We need help like Quick Call the Double. Have pity on the city, man, it's in trouble. We need heroes like the Lone Ranger when Tonto came pronto. When there was danger, they didn't say we'd be there in half an hour.
Whoa!
I'll have you know I have that single on vinyl, Dave.
Nice!
Oh, boy. That's going to be worth something.
That really
that's,
is.
It's a collector's item.
It's a relic.
Going to be worth something. Come on.
You save that, you're going to be able to pay for Cedars College tuition with just that record.
Seriously.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, the only better song from the 90s would have been the We Papa Girl rappers. Do you guys know them? Remember the song We Rule? It's just girls saying We Rule over and over again. It's like the original Girl Power.
Is this what the Spice Girls based their career on?
Right?
Yeah, it's like... it's
really good. Let's do it another dozen times.
They're like Sibo Matto a little bit. They kind of... you're not sure if they have an accent. They just repeat the kind of inane phrases over and over. It's amazing. Anyway, that was a great segment. I love one-hit wonders hip-hop from the 90s. I'm only heartbroken that we didn't have time to get to OMC.
Oh, man. There's so many that we didn't get to.
I know. We'll have you back, Katie. Even after Dave moves, you can come back just for
heck
this segment.
Yeah. We'll do it.
Well, Dave, time has come. We need some book wisdom. And I think the time has come for you to introduce us to the greatest friendship in all of literature. Is that fair to say?
It is fair and accurate to say. I think like Fox News, I believe that's what they say. So this is fair and accurate. Their friendship is beautiful for a lot of reasons. And these books are genuinely really good. I think you could even say they're literature. They're generally really well written. But I'm going to share with you a couple of quotes from them that are just kind of goofy comedy. And these were scenes where both times I read them, I just giggled in the bed next to my wife, and she asked me, like, why are you laughing? And when I tried to explain to her why I was laughing, she just thought I was an idiot. So
that's what my wife thought when I read the passages to her. More proof that women just don't understand male friendship, huh, Dave?
Oh, stop.
All right, so this first one is a classic. I'm not going to try and do their accents.
Dang it.
So two weevils crept from the clums. You see those weevils, Stephen? Said Jack solemnly. I do. Which would you choose? There's not a scrap of difference. Arcadia's Ambo. They're both the same species of Curcurnio, and there's nothing to choose between them. But suppose you had to choose. Then I should choose the right-hand weevil. It has a perceptible advantage in both length and breadth. There I have you, cried Jack. You are bit. You are completely dished. Don't you know that in the Navy, you must always choose the lesser of two weevils?
Dave, you stopped reading a little early. It actually, it says, oh, ha, 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 ha. And when I read that, Laurel said, does it literally say, oh, ha, 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 in the text? And I said, yeah. She says, why would anyone read those books? That was the moment, the center of the edge, the fact that they printed four ha's. But that's the best part.
That's really
funny. That's the
best
part.
Letting people know that this is humor.
There was a big laugh. That's what it says to me, a big one.
Exactly.
And this next passage, I couldn't stop laughing for like 10 minutes. I don't know why.
Hey, Dave, can I suggest something?
Really,
can
yes.
I suggest something revolutionary?
Yes.
What if we just read parts for this one? I'd be willing to help interpret. Just give me a character and I'll read one of the voices. Just bring it to life for Katie. See if she can understand
it
a little bit.
I need it.
Okay, do you want to be Killick?
You tell me, man. I'm just willing to serve.
Okay, you're going to be... so I'll take the first line.
Okay.
But are you going to do an accent still?
You tell me, Dave. I live to serve.
Killick, yeah, he's, you know, kind of a lower class English accent. I bet you can nail it.
Right, yeah.
Right.
Well English, mate.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Yeah,
I'm well
ready, Dave.
Killick there, what's amiss?
Which is it, your scraper, sir, for your number one scraper? Wombat's got at it.
Then take it away from him, for God's sakes.
I dursn't, sir, for fear of tearing the lace.
Now, sir, cried the captain, striding into the great cabin, a tall, imposing figure. Now, sir, addressing the wombat, one of the numerous body of marsupials brought into the ship by our surgeon, a natural philosopher. Give it to me directly, do you hear me there? The wombat stared him straight in the eye, drew a length of gold lace from its mouth, and then deliberately sucked it in again. Pass the word for Dr. Maturin, said the captain, looking angrily at the wombat, and a moment later, come now, Stephen, this is coming up pretty high. Your brute is eating my hat.
So he is, too. But do not be so perturbed, Jack. It will do him no harm at all. His digestive processes...
At this point, the wombat dropped the hat, shuffled rapidly across the deck, and swarmed up into Dr. Maturin's arms, peering at close range into his face with a look of deep affection.
Wow. I am just in awe of you guys.
Come now, Stephen, this is coming it pretty high. That's my favorite line from that, Dave. That's really good.
That's the line that sent me giggling for like 15 minutes. I couldn't stop.
Your brute is eating my hat!
Your guys' accents are phenomenal, too. We should point that out.
We lived in the mother country for a while, Katie. We just absorbed it. We just absorbed
this.
The flavors and the tastes of Britain.
The flavors and the tastes.
So deep into my mouth.
Oh, well, sir. You are English by injection, then, I guess?
Yes. I had a roni indeed.
A roni indeed. Oh, man.
Well, alas, this must come to a close. I would recommend anyone read all 20 books, plus the 21st half-finished book. If you want to understand male friendship, and I know you do, Katie.
I really do.
I would recommend reading all of the books.
So this is the Master and Commander series.
Patrick O'Brien. He wrote it, I think, through the 70s and 80s and 90s, and even up until a few years ago. But the way it's written as if it was written in the 19th century, and just really, really well written, well plotted. The action on the sea, it's just great. Really well done.
That's great. So are they going to make the next 19 films, or is it just a one-and-done thing?
Unfortunately, I believe it's a one-and-done film. Really expensive to make. It was a great movie, but really expensive.
Well... This has been a great joy. Katie, thanks again for coming back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's good to see you still.
Good to see you guys.
Off the chain. It's off the chain. Welcome to this world. It's on the chain.
It has something to do with having a dry anus.
Definitely. Not enough Vaseline in that guy's world. Don Johnson. You're beautiful. You're beautiful. God, love him. Oh, my gosh. It's glorious. The best. Totally. The beauty. Aw, yeah. Done.